It's been said, wealth isn't about having a lot of money. It's about having a lot of options. This is the Wealth Comes in a Variety of Forms podcast, the podcast highlighting the many avenues of wealth and helping you build yours. Whether you're looking for more time with your family, an amazing retirement, or just a peaceful home in the country, we discuss all the tools and resources needed to achieve your goals. From planning and goal setting to investing and wealth management, we cover it all. Here's your host, Chief Executive Officer and Senior Wealth Advisor at Awaken Wealth Partners, Matt Miller.
Welcome, everyone, to your Wealth Comes in a Variety of Forms podcast. I'm super excited to have a friend of mine, Matt Brown, joining us today. As a quick reminder, here at Wealth Comes in a Variety of Forms, we like to say wealth is not defined by how much money you have. Wealth comes in various forms. And one of the things that we're going to talk about today is a large asset known as your home. We're going to talk about some mortgage industry terms. We're going to talk about some best practices in regards to refinancing the home. And I'm excited to have a friend of mine. Matt and I met outside of work. Thankfully, we have a personal relationship and that we also have a great trusted professional relationship. So Matt Brown with Encompass Lending. Matt, why don't you tell our audience two things that they don't know about you that you love the most.
Hey, hello, everybody. Happy to be here today. I've been in the business a little over 20 years. Love what I do. Have a huge passion for helping people get into homes. And we'll talk more about as we get forward, kind of what this last year during COVID has created in my industry.
Yeah, we've learned a lot over the last
years. Yeah.
And I think that's a great point, Matt, that one of the things I think a lot of us have learned, if not most of us, and that is what we love the most.
Right.
And I think that's super valuable in our learning here today. So again, to be rich is not necessarily defined by the money that we have. Sometimes it's said that knowledge is power. So let's talk about that because we've got an Astros game to watch here in a couple hours. So we really want to get to that. So here we go. So when we talk about knowledge is power, it's best when it's applied. So Matt, why don't we talk about some mortgage industry terms? Because Lord knows, your industry and my industry, we've got some terminology that is really hard to digest, right?
It's
difficult. So let's start with APR versus interest rate. Why in the world, if I've got this, I just was told my interest rate is this. What gives? What's the difference?
So that's a very common question. So APR is the annual percentage rate. Okay. And then you've got your interest rate, which is your note rate. That's the rate that you're going to have. And that defines your principal and interest payment for the term of the loan. The APR is annual percentage rate. And it's the rate that basically is telling you for the first year only how much that loan's actually costing you. So it's the note rate plus the closing costs we had to charge you for the loan calculated into the APR. So that's what people look at when they're shopping for a loan.
And that could vary with maybe points that were purchased as well as all those other variables that come into play. Yeah, so remember everyone, APR versus interest rate, just know that that's a 1 year versus the 15, 30, whatever it is that you may have mortgaged, right?
Correct.
So Matt, let's talk about, we just talked about it, points.
Yep.
Help everybody understand.
Exactly. So discount points, basically, my strategy is when I'm pricing a loan, I go out to the industry. We're signed up with 21 different lenders. I go and I look for the lowest rate and fees. Sometimes people say, hey, look, I've got a little money I want to put into my mortgage to buy my rate down. Those are discount points.
Okay.
And so they're paying discount points to buy the rate down. Right now, we're not seeing a lot of people doing that simply because the rates are near all-time lows right now. We're in the twos. And so a lot of times it doesn't make sense to take $5,000 or $10,000 to buy that rate down when you can take that same $10,000 and impact your cash flow differently throughout the month.
And I think that's really important for all of us to understand. The money is going to be made one way or the other, whether you buy it up front with points or you have it amortization schedule out that's going out, right?
Correct.
Sure. So it all depends on what the strategy is.
It does.
Right? So would that be similar to, say, someone wants to buy a car and they want the note per month to be a certain amount, so they'll put a down payment on that.
Correct.
You're not buying points. You're just buying down the
loan
note.
Amount. That's all you're doing.
So for everybody to remember, that's really all you're doing.
Right. And keep in mind, everybody's strategy is completely different.
That's right.
I mean, it really is. I mean, some people have a lot of debt. Some people have no debt. And so people that have no debt and they're looking for ways to spend money, you know, they want to pay their house down quicker or have a lower payment because maybe they may be older and aren't a fixed income.
Right.
Things like that.
So let's talk about the importance of amortization schedule.
Okay.
Sure. And what it includes and why it's important. And then I'll share my favorite saying about that schedule.
Exactly. So the amortization schedules, it's important. It's boring if you look at it, you know, because they hand it to you at closing and it's pages. But basically what it tells you is that each month when you make your payment, what's being allocated towards the principal and what's being allocated towards the interest. And then it shows your balance going down. Obviously, the amortization schedule on a 15-year looks completely different than a 30 because you've got to get it paid down twice as fast. And so basically, you're going to see so much more being applied to the principal on a shorter term loan.
So one of the things that I like to remind all of our clients is they may not like the amortization schedule, okay? But we all know the word amore.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Love.
Yep.
What I encourage people to do is love this schedule.
Exactly.
Because this is telling you how much interest you're paying on this note for 15, 20, 30 years. And you could be literally paying the same amount in interest as you did for the home.
Oh, yeah.
And we need to know that.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Right. So how about lock? What does it mean to lock in your rate?
Right. So, you know, there's different lock-in periods. Typically, when we receive a contract on a purchase and we know that house is closing in the next 30 days, we lock it in for 30 days. That means the interest rate that I'm quoting you, it's protected for 30 days. There's a 45-day lock. There's a 60, 90, 120. So the further you lock out, the higher the rate because the lender's only willing to hedge that for a certain period of time.
So it doesn't—
And they charge you for that.
I was going to say, so they'll charge you for the longer lock rates.
Correct.
Right. So again, everyone, when we're talking about your refinancing strategy, your plan, which we'll get into next, one of the things that we want to better understand is what are the costs? What are the fees? What's the strategy? Knowing that in your industry, it's very similar across the board. All of the organizations in your industry are going to charge very similar ways.
Very similar.
Right.
And so, and I get, and this is another common question that I get quite a bit. It's like, you know, you're calling it a processing fee and they're calling it an underwriting fee. And so a lot of times when people are shopping, they're matching up these estimates, trying to find apples to apples. And every company is a little different on what we call our fees. And so basically what I tell people is what's the rate and what's the cost of the refi? It really boils down to that. How much?
Okay. And so is it also said, hey, look at the bottom line.
That's it.
So and when it comes to the list of fees,
yes.
Look at the bottom line.
Yes.
Because you have to in your industry.
Right.
Basically, you all got to do it the same way.
We do.
So what's the bottom line?
Right.
And then to your point, what's the interest rate and the term?
Correct.
Right. So let's roll that into, for example, three best practices. So when we look at knowing what loan type is best for you, help our audience understand what does that mean? How do you determine what's the best loan type?
Right. So I mean, basically, like we were saying before, everybody's different. Every family has a different strategy. Some people are moving in 2 years and they know their company's relocating them in 2 years versus somebody says, hey, this is my dream home. We're never planning on moving, which, you know, they end up moving in 7 years. The average in Houston, I mean, we see everyone moving. The average is 5 to 7 years. And so, but some people say, hey, we're going to be in this house long term. So that can be a completely different strategy than somebody that says, hey, I know for sure I'm out of here in 2 and 3 years. And so we build that loan program around whatever their strategy is, what monies they have to work with, basically their debt to income ratios. We look at that closely.
So let's jump into debt to income ratio. I think that would be another term that for you and I, maybe it's just, maybe we just know it like that, right?
Right.
But in simple terms, what's debt to income ratio mean? And there are two.
There are. So there's a top ratio and a bottom ratio. The top ratio is basically your housing payment, your proposed housing payment on the new house, divided into your gross monthly income. We like to see that number about 40%.
And by gross monthly income, if it's dual incomes, it's combined
together.
And if it's single income, then it's that.
That's correct. So you make $3,000 a month and I make $3,000 a month, and our gross income is, borrow and co-borrow, $6,000 a month.
Okay.
So then we take that proposed house payment, it's going to be $1,500, and divide it into the $6,000, and that's our ratio for the housing ratio.
That's the top one.
That's the top one. It's important, but not as important as the bottom ratio. The bottom ratio is called your total expense ratio. Okay. So now it's your proposed house payment plus everything that's showing up on your credit report as a minimum monthly payment.
Truck note, student loans.
Discover card, Chase card, the minimum.
Okay. You know?
So this was, I was telling a friend of mine the other day, I did a loan a couple months ago for a doctor. He had $378,000 in student loan debt. He's like, I'm never going to qualify. I'm just like, well, we're only looking at what you're obligated to monthly on that payment, which was $1,100.
Okay.
And so we're looking at the minimum payment. So we add up all your minimum monthly payments. That's a number, plus the proposed house payment. So you add those together and divide by your gross.
Okay.
We want to see that, depending on the loan type, to be just under 50%.
And I think it's comforting for everyone to know that, hey, look, if we don't truly understand that, that's something you're doing for everybody, yes. right? That's not yes. something that we have to pull out the old Texas Instrument calculator and figure this out, right?
No.
We can do this collectively as a team, right?
Right.
So this is a common question we get. Matt, how do we better understand the break-even, or as we like to say, the ROI?
Sure.
Right? So let's unpack that a little bit.
Sure. So basically, we look at, especially when people are buying points and saying, okay, hey, I'm buying points to buy my rate down. I saved $50 a month, but it's costing me $2,000 to do that. We divide that, and that tells us exactly how many months we need to be in that note in order for that to have been a good decision.
Okay.
So we do those break-even calculations all the time. And again, it's based upon knowing what the strategy is for the person or family that's doing the loan. It's very key, because that break-even, we look at that all the time, because if you can't outrun that break even, then it's not a good decision to refinance.
So let's give a quick Reader's Digest version of a break even. So it might be said that, easy conversation, you have these fees.
Correct.
And then you have, say, 3 years before you could recoup the money that you paid in fees.
Correct.
So it might be, for example, just again, quick scenario, that if you're not in this home for a minimum of 3 years, then refinancing it is a moot point.
Correct.
It's costing you money to do something that doesn't help you.
Correct.
Right? Okay. So in terms that everybody can hopefully understand better, that's really how it works.
And that is how it works. And on a 30-year, the longer the term, the longer the break even. So on a 15-year note versus a 30-year note or 20, you can break even much quicker, because so much more of your payment is getting applied to the principal. So now that affects our break even calculation.
And so back to this schedule that we should love.
Right.
Amortization schedule, everybody. Yeah. I'm going to hit on that. Yeah. Back to the schedule.
Yes.
Let's remind everybody where most of the interest is paid.
Up front.
Right?
Exactly.
So when we're looking at savings and we're talking about maybe only 50 basis points, which is half a percentage point, there could be a tremendous amount of savings on a 30-year mortgage.
Could be.
Right? Which we'll talk about the reasoning for that later. So we talked about the word strategy. We're going to jump into that next. But when we look at what is your strategy, help everyone understand maybe the most popular strategy, or better said, why is it important to have a strategy when it comes to your refinancing or mortgage plan?
And like I said earlier, I mean, everybody's so different. I mean, I was telling a friend of mine the other day, I just refinanced a gentleman that was 89 years old, and he refinanced a 30-year note because he's on a very fixed income, and we saved him $127 a month. That was a big deal for him. That covered his insurance, his cable bill. So his strategy is completely different than somebody else that is wanting, you know, they had additional monies to work with. They just want to get the house paid off quicker. So we went right to a 10-year fixed. And most of that payment's going towards the principal.
So I think the thing that Matt and I, in this first section of the podcast, remember that your plan is what matters most. What Matt just provided is a perfect example, because we'll do that as well, in that we'll often tell people, hey, look, this asset known as the home is part of your estate. And therefore, because it's part of your estate, your children will take care of that. So keep it as long as you can in regards to a mortgage, because that, per your estate documents, it's going to be handled then. So there is no need to pull all these assets out to pay it off.
Right.
Because it's your plan.
Correct.
Right? Yep. So I think that's really the thing here with this first section of of knowledge is power when applied.
Right.
Is know the industry terms and know what works best for you.
Exactly.
Right? So let's jump into the strategy. So when we look at interest rates, obviously being at arguably an all-time low.
Near-time lows.
And they're creeping back up a little bit.
They are.
Right?
But it's funny, and I'll stop you there. When I first got in the business, back in 2001, I mean, rates were, you know, eights, nines.
Yeah.
You know, and now they're in the high twos and low threes, and people are just like, you know, they're beating everybody up over an eighth of a point or something. It's like, man, we're so fortunate to be in this time.
Absolutely. I really remember having this conversation with my parents and the house that we grew up in.
Yes.
And it was 17%.
Unbelievable.
With a paper.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Imagine 17% with a paper.
Crazy.
It's a double-edged sword, right? Yes. Because CDs were playing good then as
That's true. Yeah.
That's crazy to think about. Yes. So we're at arguably close to all-time lows.
Right.
Right? So interest rate, we talked about APR versus interest rate earlier.
Yes.
So if you could drop a nugget on why interest rate matters so much, what would that be?
Well, obviously, we all want to get the lowest interest rate. So, right. So the lower the rate, it helps increase your purchasing power, obviously. Okay. So when right now we've got people going through that exercise, well, Matt, do I wait until the spring? Should I save a little more money and wait until the spring? And what we're seeing now, rates are slowly starting to creep up. So I have these models and these, you know, what we show people that, hey, if you purchase now at this rate, you know, it might be a $400,000 house versus if you wait, it may be a $375,000 house.
Right.
And, you know, those are the things we're going through right now, and we can show them that. But interest rate's important, obviously, in anything we do, buy a car, we always want to try to get the best rate.
Right. Because what I look at the interest rate, and we mentioned it earlier with this schedule that we love called an amortization schedule, it's super important for everyone to understand what your total costs are for this home. Because it is an asset.
Correct.
Hopefully an appreciating asset.
Right.
Because if you have a 30-year note, let's say use a conversation on a 4% interest rate, and it's a $250,000 house, it's quite possible you paid $450,000
yes.
or more,
yes.
right, in this
right.
home. So we should know that because
right.
it's an all-in cost,
right.
which you said earlier, 5 to 7 years. And so if we're repeating this, mm-hmm. let's include this in our plan because all of these costs, they cost us money.
Oh, yeah. Right? And most people are doing, I mean, you know, no secret. I think 70, 72% of the people do a 30-year note. I mean, it's up there, right? Because everybody wants the lowest payment. But you need to go 10, 11 years before you really start hitting into the principal.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, when you start looking at the amortization schedule, it's a scary document when you're looking. It's like, man.
I think that's because, why a lot of us
right,
shy away from it because we're like, how much? Went to right. my principal? Are you
exactly.
kidding me?
Right.
And the first
right.
thought is, I need to be the banker.
Right,
I need to
exactly.
be the lender. Well, then you know what?
Right.
Leverage that.
That's right.
Leverage that.
That's right.
And do
yeah.
something about it. So let's talk about
yeah.
closing costs.
Yes.
I can't tell you how many times closing costs for us, like, Matt, what gives? What? Why are all these
right.
closing costs? So
right.
help us understand.
Well, you know, I joke about this all the time. It really takes a village to do this mortgage. I mean, we counted one time, there's 32 people that touch it from start to finish, from appraisers to surveyors to attorneys to processors to underwriters to loan officers to, you know, the title company. I mean, there's a lot of people that will touch this loan. Well,
right.
when somebody touches it, they've got a fee. There's, you know, the title company. So just to kind of break down what we call the closing disclosure, lender fees typically, you know, you'll see lender fees anywhere from $1,200 to $1,800. In our industry.
Okay.
So we're $1,490. So we're $895 for underwriting and $595 for process, $1,490.
Okay.
And from there, you're going to have title company charges. You know, appraisals are going anywhere from $550 to $650 on average. So you'll have appraisals, title company charges, and then you have your prepaid expenses, like your escrow accounts,
right.
so taxes and insurance. You're required to pay 1 year of insurance up front, whether you have an escrow account or not.
Right.
So that's 1 year. Plus, if you have an escrow account, which means your taxes and insurance are in your payment, we're going to collect a couple additional months as a cushion because we want to make sure that after you've been in the house for a full year, you don't have any type of shortage if your taxes or insurance
right.
went up.
So best practice.
Best practices, right.
So speaking of best practices, I have got to just go off script here for just
sure.
a second.
Yeah. Yep.
And I beg you to remind everybody how important an inspection is.
It's important. And I just had this conversation yesterday with a friend of mine. He lived in this house for a while and then moved out. Now the landlord is asking, hey, do you want to come back and buy the house? I'm selling it. And he says, you know, I know the house. I've been in there for a long time. I don't think I needed an inspection. And I tell everybody, an inspection is not required
right.
as a lending. On the lending side, it's not required. Appraisal is, but not an inspection. But I tell people, get the house inspected.
Even on a new home.
Even on a new home, you get it inspected. That's true.
Because it's
right.
a best practice.
It is.
And simply because what we're not implying, and it's important for everyone
right.
to hear, what we're not implying is things weren't done intentionally wrong by a builder.
Right.
It's hard to know. I mean, this is a large structure.
Right. There's a lot
right?
going on.
There's a lot going on.
Sure.
So inspection, please, everyone. So let's talk about estimated value of your home. And why it's important to know that.
Right. For the refinance?
I would argue
sure.
always.
Sure.
So not just for the refi, but
right.
throughout the schedule that
yes.
we love.
It's important. It's really, especially right now, that's the first question we ask when people are calling in wanting to get refinanced. And I said, do you have any idea about what your house is worth? And then there's some sources that we go to outside to kind of look at that.
Right.
And of course, we as homeowners, we think our house is worth, you know, $300,000, maybe worth $250,000. So that's, you know, we see that a lot. But that's important because on these refinances, everybody rolls the closing costs. Most everybody, you don't have to, but most everybody rolls it back into the refinance.
Okay.
So it's important. So the reason why the appraised value is super important is because depending upon what your loan amount is, after we've rolled in the closing cost, we need a certain loan to value.
Okay.
We need a certain loan to value to be able to refinance you. So on a conventional loan, you have to have at least 5% equity, which is 95% loan to value.
Okay. So let's use that as a opportunity to talk about mortgage insurance.
Yes.
Perfect. And what it is.
Perfect.
And why it's important that we get to that 20%.
It's important. So on a conventional loan, well, first of all, let me back up. Everybody that has less than 20% equity in a property pays what's called PMI, private mortgage insurance.
Right.
It's kind of a waste of money because it only protects the lender in case you default on the loan.
So let's pause for just a second.
Yes.
Did everybody hear that? It protects the lender. So it's important. Now, the lender is a valued partner, right? Because they're the ones right. that are ensuring that we can get into a
correct.
Home.
They're the lender.
Yep. But it protects the lender.
It does.
It does not do anything to protect the homeowner.
No.
So we need to get to this 20% as fast as we can.
Correct. Now, on a conventional loan, it's 20%. On an FHA loan, it's for the life of the loan. So it never goes away. Now, they're getting ready to change that because FHA has their reserves really high right now.
Right.
And they're trying to adjust it. But as of today, you're in it. But FHA, I said, hey, look, you're not married to that FHA loan, but if it's the best loan that we need to get you in today because your credit scores are lower or you don't have a lot of money to work with, that's typically the FHA client.
Okay.
Then we get them in and then possibly the next 4 or 5 years, as they see the appreciation in their house, they see them getting more equity, then we'll refinance
and improve
them.
Improve credit score.
Improve credit score. Then we refinance them out of that FHA into a conventional loan and without PMI.
Right, because now they have the 20%
built in. Now they've got 20%. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the PMI, private mortgage insurance,
yes.
is one of those things that we often, you know, what is it,
right.
what gives, right?
Right.
So thank you for that.
Right.
So when we look at the estimated value of your home, just one quick, I want to come back to that. There are obviously a lot of websites that we could just quickly search. There's some validity in the values that
there
we
are.
See on there,
sure.
right?
Yep.
So is that maybe just a simple way for someone to look at a website and see what their home is worth?
It is.
Okay.
It is. I mean, the big one out there now is Zillow. Everybody
right.
goes out and they look at Zillow and it's called a Zestimate.
Right.
And it can be
a great branding strategy.
Exactly. Right. Keep the Z in there.
Right.
But no, it is. So it's something that most people go. But I can tell you, I've looked around. Sometimes it's there and sometimes it's way off.
Sure.
And so that's like anything else. But we, you know, I'll look at Harris County, you know, the HCAT. I'll get on there if they're in Harris County, kind of see what Harris County thinks their house is worth because that's what they're assessing the taxes at.
Right.
On their value. And
which
so I
we also see is off sometimes.
Yes, exactly. And that's why that's a whole nother conversation.
That's a whole nother podcast.
It is. It is.
Let's keep going on that one.
Yep.
So when we look at, we talked about credit.
Yes.
Okay. And we talk about A paper sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody knows I shouldn't say everybody, but most of us know the importance of having good credit.
I'm telling you, and I talk about this all the time. Great credit or good credit's more important in most cases than even having money.
Absolutely.
And this is why, because I have people that have a lot of money. I mean, a guy said the other day, you know, I've got over $1 million in my bank account, but his credit score was a 630. He's so busy, he just didn't make his payments on time and things like that. The reason why it's important is because if that house gets defaulted on, they can't come and get that $1 million. The bank really doesn't care about that money because they have no rights to it.
Right.
And so they're looking at, the only thing they know about you or I is our credit history. Do we have the ability to repay
right.
on a timely basis? That's all they see is a credit report.
And that asset that they own.
That's it.
Right.
Those are the only, it's pretty easy for a lender to see exactly what the dynamics of this loan look like.
So when we look at credit score and someone asks, this is a very common question for us.
Yes.
Matt, what's a good credit score?
Right. So in our business, to get the very lowest rate, you're looking at 740 and above.
Okay.
You're looking at 740 and above. So anywhere in the 700s, we consider good credit.
Okay.
We do.
So when we're looking at credit, and I'm going to look here at our cheat sheet here.
Yes.
Assets. When we think of assets, this is a very common question for us.
Sure.
Why are they asking me what assets I have?
Right. And it's important because on a conventional loan, conventional and FHA are two, and then we've got VA. There's many loan types out there, but the three main ones are conventional, FHA, and VA. The reason why assets are important, because on a conventional loan, they don't want you to close and be dead broke. They want you to see that if something happens like COVID, which we've seen, you know, your hours get shortened, your pay is not as great.
Right.
And so the lender, obviously, their care is the ability to repay. They're not in the business to take that house back. They want to make sure you have the ability to pay every month on time. Well, if you have some assets, liquidity, then they can see that if times get tough, you can fall back and, you know, make your house payment still for another 6 to 8 months. I mean, that's important.
I think you just said something that I think it's important for all of us to hear.
Mm-hmm.
The lender's in the business to lend money.
That's it.
Not to recover an asset. I mean, they're making money when you pay on it for 30 years.
Correct. If you're paying, right.
That's right. And I think it's important for everyone to know that it's a partnership.
Correct.
It's a partnership. They're going to make money.
Right.
But in exchange, you get to live in your home.
Right.
Right.
Great quality of life. Sure.
That was something I wanted to make sure we come back to. So when we look at credit utilization, so we were just talking about credit.
Sure.
So what's that mean?
So, and that's really key. That's like 35% of your score is credit utilization. It's up there. So what that means is, let's say you have a credit limit of $1,000, but your balance is $900. So you're highly leveraged to that debt, 90%.
Right.
Right. So to get the real good credit scores, you know, when you see people have 750 and 800s,
right.
If they have a $1,000 credit limit, they only owe 150, 200. So they're only 20%, 30% utilization.
Similar to if you have a credit card, if your credit limit on the credit card is this, then don't get above 40% because that begins to damage your credit or ding your credit.
That's correct.
Right. So you're more leveraged. Similar just like that, right?
You're a higher risk.
That's right.
And so we'll see people 6-7 credit cards and they're all maxed out. Credit score is 640.
Right.
Or we'll see people 6 or 7 trade lines and they only owe, you know, maybe they're only 20% leveraged on each. That looks really, really good because now you're showing the lender, I'm capable of managing this debt.
And they want to lend you money for less cost.
They're trying to. And that's what I was saying. I mean, because if you've got they're trying to lend you money. They do want to lend you money.
Yeah.
They're in the business to make money. So
3% over 30 years is pretty good return.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So
when you're dealing with the amount of people they're lending to.
Sure. At that volume, for sure. So let's talk about length of credit.
Mm-hmm.
Or we talked about really the accuracy of it, but how important it is to have credit established for a pretty good amount of time.
Right. Another great example. So these questions you're asking me are really applicable because I've seen some of this here just in the last couple of weeks. But we've got a first-time homebuyers that we're working with right now. Just graduated college, just got married at 24. Now they're buying their house together at 24. And I looked at this guy's credit and he had a 760 something. I'm like, this is amazing. I mean, how did you get credit this? Well, his dad put him on a card when he was 17, 18 years old and did that on several trade lines. Now this kid's got great credit. And he doesn't even know why.
Right.
You know, and so it's important to have length is important too, because a lot of times if you go get a credit card and, you know, you get it in June and you're coming to me in August, that's not a long time.
So this happened to me when I was younger. I did the exact opposite of what my dad told me to do, which was, he said, son, you have your first job.
Yep.
Do not go buy a new vehicle. Well, I did not listen to him.
Right.
And this is what the dealership told me. They said, you've got a great first income, young man.
Right.
But you have no credit.
Right.
I never established any credit throughout college. And I think this is important for our parents in the audience to know that, first of all, credit cards are not the bad rap, right? They're not the enemy here.
No.
It's how are you leveraging the credit card rather than an organization possibly leveraging you.
That's key.
So when it comes to your children, such as the story that you just provided, it's something that we often say is, okay, let's get our college student a credit card.
Yep.
Let's establish this credit as early as 19, 20. Let's put some guardrails on the use of the credit card so that we don't have poor credit.
That's
we begin to establish good credit. So thank you for that length of credit. So let's jump into... You hit on it earlier, the three loans. Let's jump into the different types of loans. And let's just start with conventional because that's the most common, I think.
So it is. It is the most common. So conventional, it's Fannie Mae, it's Freddie Mac. Those are the governing bodies that oversee a conventional loan. It's typically, I will say in my business, I'm probably 75, 25 to FHA. I do 75% conventional about. And it's the common loan type. It's for people typically that have better credit and have monies to work with. That's okay. Typically what we see, because they are what's called risk-based pricing on the interest rate. So 740 and above gets the very best rate. 720 to 739 will take an adjustment. 700 to 719 takes another adjustment. 680 to 699 takes another adjustment. So you start taking all of these break pricing points, hits. Yeah. You know, if you've got a 660 credit score, you may be paying close to 4% when par is 3.25%. Okay. So now we start looking at FHA because they don't price that way.
Okay.
You know, they don't price that way.
So before we jump into FHA, sure. Maybe, let's talk about if someone wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
You and I, we're quite competitive folks, right?
Yes.
So say
yes.
We're talking to somebody who is a lower credit score,
mm-hmm.
and they said, I don't want that. I want right. a conventional loan.
Right.
So give a quick synopsis of how they could improve a credit score. There's a lot of ways to do that.
There is.
How long it takes before that would actually be realized.
Sure. So we coach people to this all the time. Hey, I've got monies to work. I've got 20% I want to put down, so I don't want to do FHA because now I've got PMI for the life of the loan, so it defeats my purpose. I want to get into a conventional loan. And so at that point, basically what we're looking at is, let's take a look at your credit. We basically will coach people to pay down their balances. That's the easiest thing to do, is pay your balances down and don't look so leveraged to each trade line.
Okay.
That's the fastest thing.
And of how course, long does that take maybe it, to-
You know, that's a great question.
Obviously, typically,
cycle of a month minimum, but we can also do, if we pay for it, what's called a rapid rescore. So you've got three credit bureaus: Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. Each one of those bureaus will charge $35 per trade line if you want them to react like this. So in other words, we can do a rapid rescore when people are paying these down, that whereby and within 48 hours, we can get their score up 20, 30 points just by doing that. And that's a game changer.
Absolutely.
Spend
the money, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, first, let's talk about, let's not have poor lines of credit. And then second, these are some great opportunities to leverage some knowledge, right, that you bring to the table. So FHA, we talked about, maybe is mm-hmm. simply because we have a lower credit score. What about your...
And typically lower monies to work with.
Okay.
You know, so think about FHA just real quick is that if you've got lower credit scores, you could still get the lower rate with FHA. FHA rates right now, you know, high twos, low threes, they're right with conventional.
Okay. What about the adjustable? I remember the first.
Oh yeah,
the first. So this would have been in 2000.
Oh yeah,
I was. Hey, you need to get this arm. I was like, I got two of them. What are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
And then they educated me on this. So
sure.
Let's talk through that a little bit.
Sure. So when I first got in the business, adjustable rate mortgages, that's what ARM stands for, adjustable rate mortgages, they would be fixed for a period of time. So let's say you had a 5-1 ARM or a 7-1 ARM or a 10-1 ARM. Simply means that for the first 5 years, that rate's fixed, it's not going up. But then thereafter the 5 years, depending upon what index you're on or what the market's looking like, it can start adjusting.
And there's the balloon.
Then there's a balloon.
Right.
Balloon means that, hey, when that term, if you've got a 10-year balloon, when you hit year 10, they want that loan paid in full.
So it's so important that, I'll go back to what we said earlier,
mm-hmm.
know your strategy.
Right.
And do not allow...
Yes.
Someone on the other side of the desk. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I would actually prefer that it's like this.
Sure.
Like you should have your lending partner as an advocate for you.
Correct.
Right? They're on the same side of the desk as you.
Correct.
And you're looking at what you're wanting to do together.
Right.
Rather than feel like they're on the other side of the desk, simply trying to buy another boat.
Right. And so really that same person that you're doing the financial planning for, he's buying a house with me. It's the same person.
Right.
So I really try to have that same type of relationship because I want to see that person again and I want to see their kids
sure.
and I want to see their neighbors. And so that's how I've built the business that I have today, is that I've created those relationships. I mean, I'm on my third and fourth mortgages with some families, you know, and now I'm doing, you know, loans for their children that showed up at the title company at 7 years old.
What a valued relationship that is, right? Again, that's an example of being rich isn't defined by money only.
Right.
That's a feeling wealthy in the valued relationships
Correct.
That you have. So that's great. So what about jumbo or non-conforming?
So the jumbo conforming loan limit is 548,250, which means if you borrow, your loan amount's any higher than 548,250, then you're looking at doing a jumbo loan or possibly what we call a piggyback, where we'll do a first lien and a second lien. rumor on the streets is that they're getting ready to bump that conforming loan limit up to 625.
First of all, how do you come up with 548, 250?
They do it by the median income of per county, and it's odd. You know,
$548,250.
That's the max. I know, right? But they've got some calculation they do across the whole entire country.
Right.
The loan limit in California is different than ours, different than Philly. You know, so it's different counties.
Again, know your strategy.
Know your strategy, you know?
Right.
Know your strategy. And I'll tell you, to go back to what we were talking about before, a lot of times, you know, I'll have a young couple come to me and they may qualify for $350,000. But then they're sitting at home eating macaroni and cheese, and I don't want that for them. So I'll say, "Hey, this is better. Let's look at a $250,000 house. Let's put that extra $400 or $500 a month aside. Let's build up your savings, and then that's kind of where you come in."
Absolutely, and I think that's super important because we can't be strapped to our mortgage.
Correct.
Many years ago, the thought was you should be able to pay for all of your cost of living on one income.
Yes.
Unfortunately, especially now, because we've seen an increase in home prices,
right?
We've evolved, or creep has allowed to come in, and we're no longer able to live off of one income necessarily.
Right.
And I do think that would be a best practice that should be brought back.
And it's life is hard. Life is expensive.
Amen.
Life is everything, right? And so it's challenging. So that's where, you know, it's important for me. And I know you keep, you know, I've really appreciated you saying, hey, it's just not about money, or just not about, you know, everything is about quality of life and looking at cash flow and comfort, because nothing creates more stress than when you're strapped financially, is what we're seeing.
Yeah, right. I mean, because we're in the money world, right?
Divorce,
right?
You know,
so, and as I like to say, one of the greatest things about money is it's a perfect opportunity to learn how to improve communication. It's a great litmus test, because if you can't converse about money, if you're married, if you can't converse about money as a couple, it should give you reason to pause and say, hey, we really need to be able to talk about this, because this is a key to our life.
Correct.
Insert lifestyle maybe too, right?
Correct.
So great point on that. I appreciate that. So those are the examples of the loan types, right?
Right.
So when we look at...
Oh, one more thing. We're talking about non-conforming.
Yeah.
So let me just talk about that real quick.
Okay.
So you have basically conventional, jumbo, and then
548, 250.
There you go, man. Want to work? You want to need a job?
I'm still trying to figure out how you came up with that number.
Yeah. So basically, if non-conforming means that if you don't fit inside, let's go back to conventional. We talked about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Those are the governing bodies that establish the guidelines for these loans. So if you don't fit into the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac box, and there's lenders out there, that means that lender cannot sell that loan into the secondary market. And banks can't trade on that because it just doesn't fit inside the box.
Okay.
Perfect example of that, self-employed person.
Okay.
I work with a lot of self-employed people.
Right.
Self-employed people can do well, but they'll write everything off.
Right.
You know, make 150 and write off 100. And so they're coming to me with $50,000 that they pay taxes on, but they want a $500,000 house. It just doesn't make sense. The math doesn't work. So then there's lenders out there that know that. And know there's a niche market for that. So they'll do what's called a bank statement program. Hey, we don't want to see your tax returns. Just give us 12 months of your bank statements or 24 months, and we'll calculate your gross income on your deposits that you're making each month. And we'll do the loan on that. Higher interest rates, more money down, because the risk is there's higher risk. But there's plenty of self-employed people that would rather take a higher interest rate. So let's, for example, this higher interest rate is causing their mortgage payment to go up $200 a month. That's $2,400 a year. They'd much rather pay $2,400 a year in an appreciating asset than have to pay Uncle Sam another $70,000 of income. Qualify for a Fannie Mae loan at a lower interest rate.
Yeah, we call that tax bracket bingo.
Yes.
And
I've never heard of that term.
Well, the reason we use that term is exactly the reaction we got is that taxes, unless you're a CPA or an accountant, for most, it's...
Right, exactly.
Right? So we try to bring some fun to an otherwise difficult subject,
Correct, yeah.
But it shouldn't be boring.
Right.
Because it's important.
It's way important, sure.
But know the strategy.
Yep.
Right? So know the strategy. So when we look at what's your goal, both of us talk about this all the time, whether it's your lower payment or it's to take advantage of an interest rate, let's unpack those real quick. For example, it's easy to talk about lower payment. So let's 10 seconds, self-explanatory really, but what you can do with the lower payment.
And it's perfect. So looking at my business, what I've always tried to do is create value, right? I really, everybody is a different situation for me. You know, we're trying to decide what's the very best for your family,
right?
Is it the lower payment or can you take a higher payment and apply more equity to your loan and get it paid off quicker, per se, if you're 65 years old? A 65-year-old strategy is different than a 25-year-old strategy. Right. So it really depends on what their needs are. And I mean, I try to create that value because that's what's helped me in my business over the years, is that, you know, talking that young couple down off the ledge of, you know, because they'll say, well, don't you want me to have a, you know, a higher loan amount? Don't you get compensated on the higher loan amount? Yes, I do, but I want you to also.
It doesn't mean I want you to do it.
That's exactly right.
Right.
You know, I want to see you again. I want to make you comfortable, because the average is, we talked about 5-7 years in this house.
Right.
I want you to come back to me in 5 or 7 years.
So I'm going to go off script again.
Yes,
I'm going to Omaha right here. Okay. So here's what I love about that. In a fiduciary world,
right,
it is always the best interest of the client.
It's our responsibility.
Always.
Correct.
It is. That's right. That is our responsibility. And I enjoy hearing stories like that, because whether it's the realtor that reminds, my wife is the one that taught me this, is right. Real estate is only worth what somebody's willing to pay for.
That's correct.
Right? And so whether it's the realtor that's helping an individual or a couple understand that, hey, this is by this, so you need to be aware of it, or it's, hey, you don't need to buy more just simply from me or us who's helping build a plan, right?
Sure.
It's the fiduciary mindset that matters most. So I appreciate you saying that. That's a big deal to me. So when we look at lower payment, we look at shorter term. So someone may be in a 30-year right now, but they could literally go to 15, and maybe they're only 3 years into the 30, and they could cut off 12 years.
It like that. Exactly.
I mean, just like that.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
And so I think about, yes, it may have cost you $3,500, just right?
Right.
But you just cut off 12 years of your mortgage payments and the interest.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
So that's an example of a shorter frame, a shorter term. When we look at cash out, super popular now, right?
Very popular now.
So we're not condoning it necessarily, because it depends on the strategy, but give us an example of that.
So the cash out's been really important especially since COVID, because now people, their lifestyles are changing. More and more people are working out of the home. So now they're like, hey, we're not going anywhere. We love our home, but it doesn't work for us quite like we need it to if I'm going to be at home working all day. So we've seen people pull out money, people that have had equity in their house. And again, on these cash outs, you can only borrow up to 80% of the home's appraised value.
And that's a Texas.
That's Texas cash out.
Right.
That's just in Texas. And you can't do it on FHA or VA. So only a conventional loan in Texas.
Right.
But you can take that money, and if you wanted to go to Cancun and live for a year on that money, you can. They don't require you to do anything with it relative to the house. And so—
So know your strategy.
Know your strategy. Because
you increased your mortgage note now.
That's correct. That's correct. But you've got some people that'll have, you know, they've had credit card debt for 10 years and they're making the minimum payment and the balance isn't going down.
So let's unpack that a little bit.
Correct.
So you could, at a lower interest rate.
Correct.
Because 3% on a mortgage is arguably a lot less than you're paying on your credit cards.
Right.
You could use this opportunity to arguably get revolving credit free.
Correct.
Like you could remove all your credit card, maybe a student loan that you're paying more than your mortgage.
That's correct. Yeah. And also look at like the effective rate on that mortgage. Yeah, it's 3%, but by the time you write the interest off on the loan and the property taxes, the effective rate on that mortgage could be 2.5%.
Yeah. So know what you're doing and why you're doing
correct.
It, right?
Right.
But we are not encouraging people just to take the money out, because you got to pay it back.
You got to pay
again,
it back.
The lender's wanting the asset paid off, right?
Right.
So let's be wise with our decisions in this regard, because the reverse is true as well, Matt. Maybe you have, let's just say, a larger depreciating asset, such as a large vehicle or
an
something.
RV or you know, something.
Because you can also lump that into your loan, correct?
No.
Okay.
No, when you do the cash out,
I'm not talking to cash out. I'm sorry. Like if somebody wants to consolidate their debt and they want to use a mortgage vehicle to do that, that is an option that people can use.
Yes.
It's common maybe, but so it's cash out or maybe combining your debt.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, like a debt consolidation or something.
Debt consolidation.
Sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think also what's important to know is that there's a combination that might exist.
Sure.
I can decrease from 30 to 15.
Yep.
I could also take some money out. We could go to Cancun or
that's right,
or buy a second home.
That's exactly right. And we're seeing a lot of investors doing this too. We're seeing a lot of investors taking monies out of their own primary residency and buying second homes or buying investment properties. I'm seeing it quite a bit. Again, it's something to look at it depending upon what's your strategy there.
Right. And I think that's the biggest
right
for all of this. What's your strategy? Because again, this is arguably often the biggest asset or one of the biggest assets that we all have.
Sure.
And so therefore, this is not something to play with.
Right.
Right.
And a lot of people make bad decisions on that stuff and they'll come to me with bad intentions and I have to talk them off the ledge and say, my professional opinion is not to do that. Why don't you take a look at doing this, this, and this? Because at the end of the day, it really is about cash flow that we're looking at.
So again, off script here, let's talk about that for just a second. Because I think it's our responsibility to talk about things maybe not to do. So if we look at just ease of conversation, say someone's in a mortgage product now, let's just use 30 because it's the most popular.
Right, sure.
But maybe they've been in it for 10 years, okay? And their cost of living, their wants and needs have increased over time. So now they want to use the same and get another 30 year, and they basically
went backwards.
They went backwards.
Yes.
And that's something that we try to pay attention to because that would be an example of, hey, let's unpack this a little bit.
Right.
Is this really what you want to do? Because you just lost the first 10 years of interest on the previous mortgage, which, by the way, is the front end load of the interest.
Right. So you basically were renting.
That's right.
In a way. But I'll tell you, some of the really fun ones that I've done, you know, if people have had 4.5% rates and we're getting them down to 2.5 or something. A lot of times, like, you know, I did one a few months ago is that he had a 30, it's like at 4.5, 4.625. We took him down to 2.5 on a 15. He pulls out 60, 65,000. He went from a 30 to a 15 for the same payment. That's a fun loan to do.
Absolutely.
You know, and now he took that 65,000, he had quite a bit of debt, but wiped out $1,100 a month in minimum monthly payments that were just revolving.
That's right.
And we looked at that, we sat down, and it's just like, you know, it's like a playbook. You know, and he and I agreed on it. We had a strategy and then we implemented the strategy.
Yeah, as we like to say when we're working with couples or individuals, it's what's the first thing you do when you're putting a puzzle together? So if we're together, you put all dump the box over and I put all the pieces on the table. What's the first thing that we do?
Well, I'm not a puzzle guy, but my wife and son are, and they're putting stuff in colors. They're looking at the picture and they're kind of putting the colors in sections and they just go from there. That's what I've seen.
That is the most common answer we get.
Okay. Yeah.
I would submit the first thing we do is we put the picture that we're looking at up so we can always see
stay
what
focused.
We're aiming at
that's
and we
right.
can know the plan.
I get it.
Right?
Yep.
And that's the thing that I like people to understand. The other common answer we get, by the way, is the pieces with the straight edge. Well, you know that's the border.
The border, right? That's right.
And that's important
because
that's the border of our plan.
Right.
And now we need to start putting the color patches or the figures in place.
Right.
But it's very important that we always know where we're going.
You have to know where you're going.
Right.
And if you don't have a plan, I mean, you know, it's just anything else in life, sports or whatever. If you don't have a plan and you don't have something to work towards, plan your work your plan.
That's right. Yeah. So when we look at the next pieces to this plan that we're looking at, when we think about do's and don'ts, okay?
Yep.
Let's talk about don'ts first, okay? But I'm just going to say it like this and try to keep simple.
Right.
Okay? When you're in a process with someone like yourself.
Yes.
Don't change anything.
Don't change anything.
That's it.
Don't change anything.
Don't change your job.
Right.
Don't change your income.
Right.
If things happen, unfortunately,
right,
in personal aspects, that happens.
Right.
But don't intentionally change anything.
Correct.
Don't go buy something else.
Right.
Don't, if you can avoid it, don't change your job.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So that's the easiest way to say that,
right? Key factors. Because, I mean, you know, when I'm qualifying you, I'm taking a snapshot of you right then and there. I don't want that picture to change because I've got 3 weeks in underwriting. I need that to look the same. I've got stories upon stories, as you can imagine. But I've had people show up at closing with a new car, stick right on the, you know, and I didn't know anything about it. I've had the escrow officer tap me on the shoulder that we tried to verify that person's employment. And they were laid off the previous Friday and we're closing on Tuesday.
Right.
You know, there's so much that happens.
Right. And of course, you can't do anything
about
being laid
about
off. But the
but
big key
stuff,
is tell you.
Right. Right.
Right.
Tell me.
Or avoid the things that we shouldn't do now. Wait till we're done with closing. Wait till you have
that's
the keys.
Right. And then do whatever.
And then go buy
once it's
new
funded,
car.
Then do whatever you want to do.
Exactly.
But one of the other things too that I remember talking about is our actually writing down to you yesterday is one of the biggest things that we are challenged with is cash. We hate cash because we don't know where it comes from. And everything right. has to be sourced, paper trailed.
And accounted for.
And accounted for because we don't know, did you rob a bank? Did you rob a liquor store? Did you sell
no
drugs?
No one's robbing banks right. on this podcast. Wealth does not come in that form.
It's not that easy.
I know you're kidding. That was the lawyer speak right. there.
But we joke about that all the time is right. that, you know, we need to know where that came from. Was right. it a gift? You know, did you sell a motorcycle?
And you know, we need, I think this is important
we
to
just need to know. Yeah.
Exactly. Because we'll get that question sometimes.
Right.
Hey,
why do they care?
Why do they keep asking?
Right.
Me? Again, that's kind of the assets question.
Right.
Why do they keep asking me these things?
Well, that's right.
You're borrowing $300,000.
They want to know.
Would you want to know?
Right.
Right. And so I think that's the biggest way. So those are the don'ts.
Yeah.
Just
right.
if you can, don't change anything.
That's exactly
until
right.
Until you got the keys.
That's exactly right.
And then the lender's good. You're good.
Right.
Move in. Let's camp out on the do's.
Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What should we do in preparation? So let's talk about. You're going to need some items. You're going to need some pay stubs. You're going to need some statements.
Correct.
So be prepared to provide this information.
Correct. This is, and really, it's not bad. People think like, oh, it's going to take blood. They're going to, you know, it's going to be a torching event.
Right.
But it's not. It's if you're a wage earner, meaning you work for a company, we want to see your last 2 years W-2s. We want to see your last 30-day pay stubs and your last 2 months bank statements.
That's industry norm.
That's industry norm.
So that's not just...
That's it.
Okay.
And, you know, those four items, that's really it. And then if you're self-employed, we need to see your last 2 years' tax return.
Okay. So be prepared to provide some documentation on these items.
Correct.
I think we talked about it earlier, but let's just not forget, it's important to know how long you're going to be in this home.
Correct.
Because earlier when you said 5 to 7 years, that's just like when you... many statistics that talk about vehicles.
Right.
Right? Many people are out of their vehicle in 3 years.
Right.
And that's concerning.
Sure.
Right? So when we look at know how long you're going to be in your home, let's talk about it again.
Mm-hmm.
The importance of the plan, right?
Correct. And plans change. I mean, you know, things happen to
right.
people. You know, I had a thing the other day, the guy said, hey, look, you know, I'm buying this house as my primary, but it's very possible I'll be leasing this out in a year. Is that a problem? And I said, no, it's not a problem. As long as you represent-
It could be a good strategy, actually.
Right. Exactly. As long as you represent this transaction to what it is today, and we're not creating any fraud as
right.
far as how you're because if it's a second home or an investment property, it's more money's down because it's higher risk for the lender because it's not your primary.
Right.
Times get tough. You don't short pay on the house you live in. You let those go.
That's right. So when we look at know your home's value, we talked about that a little bit.
Right.
Really no need to come back to that. Yeah. Just know what it's worth.
Right.
Right.
Have a really good idea.
Or maybe better said, know what the equity is.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
So let's not assume everyone knows how to quickly understand that. Okay.
Right.
But say Reader's Digest version, how do you quickly discern what your equity is?
So very easy. Equity is the difference between what your house is worth and what you owe on it.
Right.
That's the equity.
Right. So when we look at all the dues, when we think about continuing on this list here, what are some others that we want to make sure we're doing?
So, I mean, again, we talked about it before. What's most important is credit. I mean, credit is really everything in our world.
Right.
And so, you know, make sure that you've got your balances under a controlled utilization. You know, we talked about 30, 40%. If you can start paying some stuff down, if you know you're going to buy a house in the next 2 or 3 months, those are the things to start working on is getting your credit up to speed, getting your assets prepared, making sure that no large deposits. That's a big thing for us on that. And just be very transparent with the loan officer when you're working with them because, you know, we're on the same team. I'm trying to help. But a lot of times the attitude is that don't let him find out. Well, the problem is we will find out. We just don't want to find out in week three. Or at the table.
Because you won't close.
Because it's going to delay and it hurts everybody. So
right.
that's the message that I really talk about up front is like, hey, we're on the same team. Tell me exactly what I'm looking at here. What do we need to work on? What's our strengths? And then let's go from there.
So what about one more do? And that is know that this is going to take some time.
Correct.
Right? So let's talk about what your average closing time looks like so people can understand. And even if that's a cash or other type of purchase.
Right. So even if you pay cash, which has been pretty common lately because you've got a lot of people moving here from California right now, they have cash. That's a whole nother podcast too.
Right.
But basically, even if you're paying cash, you're still looking at 7 days to 10 days to close on that loan. They've got to open title. Okay. They've got to, you know, the title company's got to get ready. The industry standard, the expectation is typically 30 days on a purchase.
Okay.
We've been averaging around 26, 27, but the expectation is 30 days. 30 days from when we get the contract. And by the time we get the contract, you and I have already worked together. I've already got your pay stubs, bank statements, W-2s.
Right.
Your driver's license, your ID. I've got that ready to go. So now I'm just waiting on the contract. Once we have the contract, it goes into processing, which means we're ordering title, we're ordering the appraisal, we're doing what needs to be done. Okay. We're packaging this loan. Then it goes into underwriting. Underwriting can take 3 to 4 days. So that's when they're dissecting what we're putting together.
Right.
My job is to make that package, you know, I look at it as a gift and I'm trying to put this pretty bow on it because I want it to be as clean as possible.
Okay.
Going into underwriting, because then once it's being underwritten, it comes out of underwriting and it's going to have what's called conditions. Very rare will it come out just ready to go to closing.
Okay.
It's going to come out, hey, we saw you're missing page 5 of your bank statement. Hey, we noticed you didn't have employment here during this date. Where were you working? You know, right. Those little things like that. And then once we resolve those conditions, it's called a clear to close. We're ready to go.
Okay.
And again, this process takes about 30 days. Start to finish.
So start to finish, though, all in. I mean, mm-hmm. We could be talking 45 days from the day we initiate a conversation.
Oh.
And you're gathering all.
It could be months. I've talked to people, you know, last year that are just now starting to look, you know.
Right.
But I've dripped on them. I've stayed in touch. They're asking me, hey, Matt, I'm getting ready to lose my, you know, or change jobs. Or
right.
I've lost my job. And now, you know, is that going to affect me? No, I'm still in the same industry. Everything's good. I've got a slight gap. So.
And I think that it goes back to something else that I'm thinking about right now. It's like there's always our part,
Right.
And then there's someone else's part.
Right.
Right. And we can't expect that someone else is going to do our part for us.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Hence the reason for valued partnerships.
Correct.
On that note, Matt, I'm going to tell you, I value our friendship.
Hey,
I'm super thankful for just knowing you outside of work. And I'm super thankful for how you help our clients.
Great.
And so what I would say is we're going to drop our wealth pin here. And every podcast, we like to drop a wealth pin.
Perfect.
And that is a GPS coordinate for everyone to understand that we've all been through a lot these last 2 years. I think it's very important for us to reflect back on some of the things that we've learned. And arguably, life is so fast that as we adjust to our new norm, let's not allow the narrative to be determined for us.
I agree.
Let's determine our own narrative.
I agree.
Because there are so many things that I think we've learned through this time. As work and life is so fast, sometimes we forget what we value most. But we've learned or maybe been reminded what we value most. Let's not forget that as we go back into a new norm going forward. And one of the ways to do that is to know the mortgage industry terms.
Yes.
And know what you can leverage. Leverage your knowledge.
Correct.
Leverage your ability to do something with this home and the refinance and make your life better.
Exactly.
Because wealth comes in a variety of forms.
Right. And I that's one of the things I really appreciate about what you've done. And you and I have had many conversations on this, is that you're one of those guys that's in it for the right reasons, just like me. I mean, and I always tell people, be a trusted advisor. Really surround yourself with people that have the knowledge that can assist you in getting you to focus on that plan.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And in closing, we're going to say, go Stros.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Comes in a Variety of Forms podcast. We'd love to connect with you. Find us on social media at Awaken Wealth Partners or visit us at our website, awakenwealthpartners.com. The podcast is available anywhere you get your podcasts. Don't forget to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you found the episode helpful, be sure to share it with a friend and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever fine podcasts are found.